There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Welcome to today's WCN TV program. This is Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Well, it's almost here. Our big ministry conference weekend is coming up this weekend. And although there have been quite a few obstacles thrown in our path as we prepare for this, we won't back down. We actually sold out of tickets a little over a week ago, but I've made arrangements for a few additional seats. And I believe we have about 15 of those left. So if you'd still like to come to the conference, you still can. But now you need to call me to register, because the official site for ticket sales closed when we sold out. So just call me. Wait till after the show, obviously. And we can accommodate you. My number is 715-486-8066. But I would do that soon, because those few extra seats we are able to get are not going to last long. My guest today is one of the speakers who will be presenting at the conference. Alex Newman is with us today. And Alex, I hope you will be patient with me. I have something I need to do here before we bring you into the show.
No problem.
I got some very tragic and very sad news yesterday from another one of the people that will be presenting at the conference, Doug Hagman. I'm going to just let Doug explain the situation. It's a very sad and troubling situation, but he made a recording this morning, and I'd like to show that to you now.
It's Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. My friends, I've got a very important announcement to make. In a few months, it'll be 5 years since the death of my son, Joe, who died at the age of 36. And I sat at this chair along with Russ Dizdar next to me, the late Russ Dizdar, and made the announcement. I announced his death on air, along with what was believed to be the cause and manner of his death. My announcement was based on the information I had at the time, and some of it was proved wrong, very wrong. And I've learned from those mistakes. The first information is not always the correct information, and that often things are not always as they initially appear. It's with a very, very sad and very heavy heart that I sit in front of you, our viewers and listeners today, to make yet another sad announcement. Yesterday, Monday, I was notified that my oldest daughter, Julie, Joe's sister, was found dead, laying on the grass behind her home just after noon Eastern time. It's important for me to stress that the circumstances surrounding her death remain undetermined at this time. I've been speaking with police detectives and will continue to do so along with the coroner until a complete resolution is reached. for the second time in 5 years, burying a child. As I've always attempted to be transparent with all of you, but to balance that transparency with the privacy of the family and the people here, I will tell you only what we know at this moment in time. Just after 7:30 p.m. on Sunday evening, and there's a lot of information in addition to that that I am not going to say. My daughter is believed to have left her house to run an errand. What happened next remains unclear. However, when she failed to return home by 2:30 a.m. Monday morning, a missing person report was filed. At approximately noon on Monday, Julie's body was found when a neighbor noticed what appeared to be a person lying near the rear of the residence in the backyard. It was the lifeless body of my daughter, who appeared to have been dead since the previous evening. Her body was determined to have been lying outside in the elements for at least 14 hours after her death. A police investigation is ongoing, and it's not my place to comment on that investigation whatsoever, as doing so might compromise any ongoing efforts. Folks, you know this. I'm convinced, though, after speaking with one detective in particular, that this matter will be resolved. While I'd like to tell you more, I just can't. I cannot. To avoid further speculation and maintain a proper level of privacy for my family, I must decline to provide any additional information. And as you might imagine, our hearts are broken over this tragic loss. I must point out that Julie was my oldest daughter. I should also point out that she lost her husband to a heart attack a couple of years prior, and she has three children. I've received several communications, by the way, asking if she was Eric's wife, Eric the tech's wife, Jackie. And of course, no, no, no. This is my oldest daughter, Julie. And I know many of you met Jackie at a few conferences when she traveled with us. Again, to be perfectly clear, it was not Eric's wife, but my oldest daughter, Julie. Lastly, and as you might imagine, there are many things, many time-sensitive things that require my immediate attention. And accordingly, I will not be on the air the rest of this week, but I expect to return on Monday. Meanwhile, updates, if there are any, can be found at HagmanPI.com. Considering the timing and sequence of planned events, both with the family, with my daughter, and things going on here, and after very thoughtful conversation with my family, I intend to fulfill my obligation to speak at the conference in Wisconsin this coming Friday and Saturday. As frankly, there's not too much more I can do here. There won't be. I made this decision based on a quote, based in part, I should say, on a quote from Winston Churchill that seemed appropriate in this situation. When you're going through hell, don't stop. Just don't stop. And hell is exactly what it feels like. In closing, it's been a very difficult 5 years, and I cannot tell you how much your prayers and your support mean to me, to us, to my family. I want to thank Eric the Tech and everyone who has reached out with condolences. I would name everyone, but to do so would cause me to miss a few, and I don't want to do that. But thank you all who have reached out to me, and whose kindness has touched all of us so deeply. To be clear, folks, I'll be busy over the next few days, but we'll be in attendance in Wisconsin at the Wisconsin conference on Friday and Saturday, and we'll return on Monday. Again, I thank you for your prayers, your support. And folks, may God bless each and every one of you, protect you today and in the days ahead. Thank you.
There are no words folks for what this family has been through. And for those of you who are coming to the conference this weekend, all I can say is we need to love Doug. We need to give him a hug, and we need to pray with him deeply this weekend. Jonathan asked if there is a place to donate or support the family. Doug is not asking for that, but yeah, you could do that at his website, HagmanPI.com. You can also find the video there that we just showed, and you can also find it on the Hagman Report page on Rumble.com, and you can leave comments there if you're logged into Rumble. So wanted to let you know that. That hit me pretty hard yesterday when Doug called and let me know. So anyway, let's move on. Alex Newman is with us today. We're grateful to have him with us. Alex is one of the most sought-after conservative speakers in the country. His resume is too extensive to even begin to start on, but chances are good that you've seen him on mainstream news outlets and documentaries, on alternative media sites, or have read one of the books that he's either authored or co-authored. He's a greatly respected journalist, educator, and speaker with a wealth of information on just about any topic you can come up with. And we are very thrilled to have him back with us on WCN-TV today. You can learn more about Alex at his website, libertysentinel.org. Alex, welcome to the program. Looking forward to seeing you in a few days here.
Great to be here. It's an honor. Thank you very much for having me, Rob. And yes, looking forward to seeing you in Wisconsin.
I know you've got a crazy busy schedule like so many of us. So when I asked you about the topic for this weekend's conference, you gave me three very good options, and it was really hard to choose. So today we're going to try to just touch briefly on all three of those issues and probably get into even more information. So why don't we jump right into our first subject that we want to talk about today, and that is central bank digital currencies. We know these are coming. It's only a matter of time before they are implemented globally. So, Alex, what are these central bank digital currencies, and why are they so important to the globalist takeover of the world?
Well, the marketing behind the central bank digital currencies is that they're just a new and improved form of money, right? We're in the digital era, and it's more convenient. It's less risky. You're less likely to get robbed, etc. But actually, these are a major control mechanism that's being rolled out as part of the effort to bring all of humanity under control. So on the surface, it's just digital money, right? Digital currency issued by a central bank. And as of right now, it's still operating in the places where they've already unveiled and released the CBDCs, as they call them. It's still operating alongside cash. Ultimately, the objective is to eliminate cash. And I'm not speculating about this. We've got the documents. We've got the statements from the individuals behind this who have talked very openly about this. And once that happens, all transactions then would have to be digital. So everything you buy, everything you sell would be tracked, would be monitored, would be approved. And there's a lot to these CBDCs that makes them fundamentally different from traditional cash money. One of them is that it is programmable. And again, that's not my opinion. We have the documents where they talk about this. I've got senior leaders from the International Monetary Fund, the Bank for International Settlements, the World Economic Forum, all talking about this. So these currencies would be programmable so that they can be, so they can control how they can be spent, where they can be spent, when they can be spent, by whom they could be spent. They would be linked, of course, to a digital ID, to a digital identification system. And ultimately, it's a global system that they're building. So I think the simplest way to think of it is keep Revelation chapter 13 in mind, where no man will be able to buy or sell without this mark. And I'm not saying CBDCs are the mark. What I'm saying is we're watching now the architecture being laid down to create a system for the first time in all of recorded human history where every single person on the planet could be prevented from buying or selling. And there's a whole lot more to this can of worms, but that's the essence of what we're dealing with here is a digital currency that they hope will eventually replace the cash money that we are used to for the purpose of controlling, surveilling, and ultimately changing the behavior of everybody on the planet.
So I read an article today, and I believe they were talking about, I believe it's the UN, has just announced their what they're calling their 50 in 5 program, which is 50 countries within 5 years totally on board with this. Is that correct?
Yeah, and so I actually just wrote an article about this last week. It's a really, really important subject, and I alluded to this briefly in my comments on CBDCs. CBDCs are one component of this broader picture. So the UN is now using terminology. They refer to this whole broader system as digital public infrastructure or digital public goods. CBDCs are one part of that. Other parts include, of course, the digital IDs and the broader data systems and technology systems, the electronic payment mechanisms that make it all work together. And of course, that'll eventually be linked with your vaccine passport, your health records, and they're already saying openly now you ought to have it on a microchip under your hand. But this 50 in 5 program, this is actually openly backed by Bill Gates. In fact, he's one of the big financiers, and the Rockefeller Foundation teaming up with the United Nations, in particular the United Nations Development Program. And they're bringing together, they call it 50 countries. Really, we're talking about 50 governments. They're calling these the first movers. In other words, the first ones to jump on the bandwagon, where over the next 5 years, each of these countries has pledged to implement at least one critical component of this digital public infrastructure on their population. So you've got a lot of third world kleptocracies. You've got a handful of very wealthy nations, governments like the government of Norway is participating. The government of Singapore is participating. And what each of them have pledged is that by the year 2028, they're going to have at least one facet of this imposed. And then the UN is actually going to coordinate. And they say this all in a press release, right? None of this is speculation or theory. They announce in their press release that then these 50 governments, as they perfect this particular system that they're working on, they'll be able to share that technology, share the best practices with all the other governments. And if you read their press release, they're very, very clear that the 50 in 5, that's just the first phase. Eventually, they expect that all governments will join forces on this. And they put it very bluntly. They say, well, it's better you just join now so that way you don't have to develop it yourself later. So really, we're watching here the emergence of a global digital gulag system that will come down from the UN level with partnerships from Bill Gates and the Rockefellers through your national government and through these regional governments as well, right? The European Union is a critical player in this. They're right now in the final stages of creating the digital euro with the digital euro wallets. They were actually the first to implement these digital vaccine passports. They handed the technology over to the World Health Organization to now, and the head of the World Health Organization says that's the platform they're using to impose this on all of humanity. So you look, and all of this is working together to creating really a panopticon, right? Like the fictional prison where every prisoner could be watched all day, every day, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
So I just read this article this morning, and already Alex has it not only digested, but actually pretty much memorized. You blow me away, Alex. I don't know what to say. So
well, I appreciate that, Rob. Thank you.
They're talking about, within 5 years. Do you think that this is going to be a slow phase in for us here in this country? Or do you think we're going to be all of a sudden, all of our accounts switched over to CBDCs?
I think the most likely scenario, Rob, is we're going to see a major crisis, and the crisis is going to be used as the pretext to bring this in. So I do believe it will be sudden. To be clear, these things are already underway. The systems are already being developed. The Federal Reserve is already creating the technology. A lot of people have already heard of the FedNow system, which is a critical component of the architecture. So all of this is already being developed. It's being coordinated by the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, with Communist China serving as kind of the pilot nation, if you will. And Americans, they understand, are going to be a really tough nut to crack. They actually just got the digital IDs through the Australian Senate last week. So all over the world, these things are happening. But they know America is going to be especially difficult. Americans, for various historical and constitutional and traditional reasons, have an aversion to large centralized government. At least we have had historically. So they know America is going to be tough. But I think the most likely scenario is we're going to see some sort of absolutely catastrophic crisis scenario, whether that be a cyber attack or a cyber pandemic, as Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum calls it, or the scenario that David Webb lays out in his recent book, The Great Taking, where they will cause some sort of massive financial crash where your bank accounts will be frozen, everybody will be unable to go out and buy or sell, and then the government will come in and pose as the savior here, and they'll say, look, we know there's a crisis, we know you can't access your bank account, all the banks are on holiday, but don't worry, just download this little app on your phone, and with that app, you'll be able to borrow some central bank digital currency, you'll be able to go out to the grocery store and get your eggs, get your milk, get your cheese, whatever it is that you need. And so I suspect they're going to have to use a crisis here to bring this about, because there really is no simple organic way of bringing this about. I've looked at the polling data. The vast majority of Americans have never heard of a central bank digital currency. But among those who have heard about it, opposition is overwhelming, right? I mean, there is just a small fringe of Americans who, after learning what a central bank digital currency is, even with the lipstick on the pig, think that this is a good idea. So my guess is it'll be very much like what happened with COVID, right? It'll be a very sudden situation where people are deliberately stampeded into panic, into fear, into terror. You know, how am I going to feed my children? How am I going to pay my mortgage? You know, how are we going to get the things, the essentials that we need? And that's where they'll roll out this technology. As Rahm Emanuel put it, you don't want to let a crisis go to waste. It's an opportunity to do things you didn't think you could do before. So, be prepared, folks. The World Economic Forum, they've been plotting and doing war games on this cyber pandemic, this cyber attack for years now. And so they're putting the pieces into place. Once they're ready to unveil it, I believe we'll see a major crisis, and that'll be the pretext.
And you can't really call this a conspiracy theory, can you? Because they're coming right out and telling us what they're planning to do.
That's right. And it's important to say that because, you know, the CIA actually did a major campaign decades ago to, first of all, coin the term conspiracy theory and then to associate it with every ridiculous thing imaginable, including tinfoil hats and things like that. And that was a deliberate propaganda campaign. And so people are still very susceptible. It's like a trigger word, like, you know, Pavlov's dogs, they were trained when they heard that bell. It was time to salivate because they thought it was time for food. So Americans, through constant repetition in the media, constant repetition from authority figures, have been trained when they hear conspiracy theory, not to salivate, but to think, well, that must be by definition ridiculous. But if you look up the definition of the word conspiracy in the dictionary, and anybody can do this right now, the definition of conspiracy is two or more people working in secret for some evil, illegal, or immoral purpose. And so by that traditional definition of conspiracy, and by the way, people are charged with the crime of conspiracy virtually every weekday all across this country by state and local prosecutors and federal prosecutors. So conspiracy is a real thing. Conspiracies happen all the time. We have numerous conspiracies recorded in the Bible. But this particular issue is not a conspiracy because it's happening out in the open. Now, there may be conspiratorial elements to it where, we don't know the whole picture. Some things are being discussed behind closed doors. But the fact that they're rolling out central bank digital currencies, the fact that they're going to be programmable, the fact that every record will be tracked, monitored, stored, data mined, analyzed, processed through the algorithms and the artificial intelligence, that's neither a conspiracy nor a theory. It's just a fact. And at this point, these people are proclaiming it pretty openly. Not on the front page of the newspaper yet, but in their conferences, in their policy papers coming out of the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements and the Federal Reserve. In fact, a member of Congress just recently got a document from the Federal Reserve on what they believe are their primary responsibilities. And on that list was the creation of a central bank digital currency. Joe Biden himself actually signed an executive order in March of 2022 saying the U.S. government and the current administration place the highest urgency on developing and deploying a central bank digital currency. So by the traditional definition of conspiracy, this does not fit.
Well, and I believe you're right. I believe they are going to use a major catastrophe, disaster, black swan event in order to bring this in. And unfortunately, I also believe that Americans are going to jump on it hook, line, and sinker once it happens, just as they did with their COVID scamdemic. So having said that, you know, it's also going to be tied to a social credit score, our health information, our carbon usage. It's basically a way to virtually lock down the world, isn't it?
It is, Rob. And again, this is all very, very evident just from reading their own documents. I've got, and I may present a little bit in Wisconsin if time permits, but I may give some of the evidence for this. But they are openly telling you that this is going to be used to calculate your carbon footprint, that it's going to be used to help you make better choices. We've got some of the top business figures, top government figures in the world talking like this. I was just at the UN Climate Summit on the Arabian Peninsula just a few months ago, and the very first billboard that assaulted me when I got off of the airplane in the United Arab Emirates was get a MasterCard. Now we have an individualized carbon footprint tracker. So this is not hidden anymore. They fully intend to give every person on Earth a carbon budget, a carbon allowance, whereby you'll be allowed to emit X amount of CO2. They're still working on exactly how much. And then anything beyond that, you'll either have to pay for it or you'll be forbidden from doing it. So let's say you had a steak dinner and you took a flight to go visit your relative in another state. Well, you've already exceeded your carbon budget for the month, and therefore you may no longer do anything that emits a serious amount of CO2. I would remind people that the gas you exhale is carbon dioxide. It's not a pollution. It's the gas of life. Plants use it for photosynthesis. The idea that this is some kind of toxic pollution is simply preposterous. But the CBDCs and this control mechanism involving a carbon footprint are intimately intertwined. And I'm glad you mentioned the social credit scores as well. That's also a critical part of this. And again, it's not speculation. They have come out and said this fairly openly. For the folks who aren't familiar with the Communist Chinese social credit score system, I first wrote about this literally a decade ago when it was just being rolled out. It still hadn't been made mandatory for everybody in China. But the simple way to understand it is every slave in China, and they are slaves, gets assigned a particular score. And that score is based on a wide array of factors. Some of them you wouldn't even consider in a million years that they would be relevant. Like, do you keep your cell phone fully charged, right? If you do, you get bonus points for that. If you don't, you have a problem when it comes to the social credit score. But the really significant things are you with the program, so to speak? Have you questioned the government on social media? Do you have friends who maybe question the government on social media? If you do, your score is going to decline drastically. And that social credit score is actually critical to every area of your life. If you want a good job, you better have a good social credit score. If you want to be able to travel overseas, you better have a really, really good social credit score so that they'll issue you a passport. If your score drops low enough, you can't even travel outside of your town. You can't even get on a train and go to another city. Your children can't go to a decent school. You can't access a whole range of benefits. And as your score continues declining, not only do all your privileges disappear, you may find yourself in a re-education camp, and they have millions and millions of people across China in these, and they call them re-education camps. And if your score continues to drop, if you're one of those people who just can't be re-educated, they will literally strap you to a table, chop your organs out while you're still alive, and put them into the body of a senior Communist Party of China member or even a Middle Eastern oil sheik with a lot of money. And they've been doing this for years and years and years. So the social credit score in China, which again is kind of the pilot program for this whole global system they're pioneering, is absolutely essential to everything you do in life. It's linked to your digital ID. It's linked to your ability to buy and sell and spend digital currency. And that same system is going to be rolled out around the world. And I'll quote just very briefly, let me see if I can find it, from the Financial Times. I found an article that they had published just a couple years ago that was very, very revealing about what they're doing. They said, what CBDC research and experimentation appears to be showing is that it will be nigh on impossible to issue such currencies outside of a comprehensive national digital ID management system, meaning CBDCs will likely be tied to personal accounts that include personal data, credit history, and other forms of relevant information. So they are telling us in very, very transparent language that by the time this whole system is rolled out, your social credit score will be an intimate part of the entire digital infrastructure that they're building.
I read that exact quote this morning. Ray in our audience has a question or a comment. Come on in, Ray.
Yeah, Alex. Interesting. I know most of us, we're all going to resist this because it's just another noose around our necks. But say we do fall into this system, do you believe that this is not taking the mark of the beast where to buy and sell? I know you can't buy and sell with it, but this isn't the mark of the beast that God talks about, that if you take that mark, you're doomed. Do you believe that this is it?
I do not believe this is the mark of the beast, to be clear. I don't believe that the central bank digital currency or even the things associated with it are the mark of the beast. I do believe it's part of the infrastructure. It's the precursor, because we know from Revelation 13 that you won't be able to buy or sell without it. But I think there's something more to it. And I do believe it's going to be clear to believers when the time comes. I don't believe God's going to leave us guessing. Well, is this the mark? Is that the mark? Am I going to be damned forever if I take? I think it's going to be very clear to believers. But when you go a little bit further down the rabbit hole, and I don't know how far we want to go today, Rob, but this is actually all a precursor to even more outrageous and ridiculous ideas that these people have put forward. I'll point you to Klaus Schwab's book. He's got a book called The Fourth Industrial Revolution, where he outlines what he describes as a fourth industrial revolution. He wants you to think of it just as like the next industrial revolution. Really, it's far more dramatic than that. And he himself says one of the big differences between the fourth industrial revolution and the previous ones is that it doesn't just change what you're doing, it changes you. And this is a direct quote from him. If you take, for example, a genetic editing. So the fourth industrial revolution, as you read in his book, involves the implanting of microchips and embedding them into your brain. And by the way, this technology is not some science fiction. It's not some hypothetical future scenario. This exists already. Elon Musk, in fact, has a company called Neuralink that already they have this installed in human beings, connects the brain directly to computer systems. The genetic manipulation, this is not some hypothetical future technology. This is stuff that exists already. They're using it. In fact, we saw a broad rollout of these kinds of technologies with the mRNA injections masquerading as vaccines against the COVID. These things quite literally manipulate the genetic instructions. And to be clear, I believe God wrote my genetic code. And you know, as a Christian, I believe God wrote it the way he wanted it. And so when they're talking about manipulating my genetic code, and they've been talking about this openly for some time, by the way, Bill Gates wrote an article back, I believe it was 2016 in Foreign Affairs called Gene Editing for Good, where he says, we already genetically engineer our crops. We already genetically engineer our livestock. Why shouldn't we genetically engineer our babies? So these technologies exist. CRISPR is probably the most well-known. I believe the mark of the beast will do something fundamental to who we are, whether that be through our genetic code, whether that be through direct access to our mind, that is irreversible in a very real sense. And again, I don't know the details. I don't believe any of us do. I believe in retrospect, it's going to be very clear. I do not believe the central bank digital currency is the mark, but I believe it is part of the infrastructure that will pave the way for eventually creating that mark.
Well said. Okay. So, folks, we are going to run out of time here today. Not going to get to all my notes, I can tell you that right now. But I have to ask this before we move on to the next topic. And so, Alex, we've heard a lot about precious metals like gold and silver being a safe investment to secure our savings. But if everything goes digital, will things like Silver Eagle coins be of any real value to buy and sell? Or even if you put all your savings into gold bars, how could those be used once everything goes digital?
Yeah, that's a very good question. And, you know, one of the questions I get asked most frequently nowadays, Rob, and this is probably true for you, I know it's true for a lot of people who go out and speak publicly and talk about these things, is what do I do with my savings? What do I do with my 401k and my retirement and my pension? And my answer is, I don't know, right? You know, I know what I have done with my meager savings, but I'm not a financial advisor. I cannot possibly take responsibility for your finances. And so I always tell people, look, let's just go to what the Bible teaches. First of all, the Bible tells us not to store up our treasure on earth, but to store it up in heaven, right? Where the thieves aren't going to break in and steal it, where the moths and the rust aren't going to get to it. And so we always need to keep that in mind. And by the way, I'm not one of those people who says, you know, go out and give and sell everything you have and give it all to the poor. You know, for some people, that may be the right thing to do. If that's what Christ calls you to do, if that's what the Holy Spirit is calling you to do, then you better listen. But there are other very clear biblical instructions about the duty of believers. One of the duties of believers is to take care of the members of their own household. In fact, God says, if you don't do that, you're worse than an infidel. Okay, if you go to the book of Proverbs, it says we need to be laying up an inheritance for our children's children. And so for most of us, I believe we have a responsibility to be good stewards of what God has given us. First and foremost, we want to sow into the kingdom. We want to fund missionaries. We want to fund programs that the church is running to serve the poor, to preach the gospel, to make disciples of all nations, to educate our children in the way that they should go with Christian schools and things like that. These are all very, very important things. And I think that really should be our primary priority. But when it comes to what do we do to preserve our own wealth, I really don't know. I do believe gold and silver are useful as just a store of value, right? I don't think there's anything especially magical about them, although God does repeatedly refer to them in the scriptures as legitimate money. And frankly, my reading of honest weights and measures, that really requires an honest monetary system. And we don't have that today. We have a scam, a fraud of a monetary system that literally exists to suck the productive capacity and the wealth out of the middle class in the United States. So I personally have been investing in gold and silver since I was in college. I started buying gold when it was $600 an ounce. I started buying silver when it was $8 an ounce. Last I looked, gold was almost $2,400 an ounce. Silver was about $27 an ounce. So it has held its value, right? It's not that it is more valuable now than it used to be. It's just that the dollar is less valuable. Now, will we be able to trade with gold and silver if and when this whole digital prison is imposed on us? I don't know. I think it's possible. But I also think, again, we need to go back to the scriptures. In Matthew chapter 6, I believe, Christ is talking to us about this issue. And he says, look at the birds, right? They're not reaping. They're not sowing. They're not saving up their stuff in the barns. And yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Aren't you more valuable than these birds? And the answer is, of course, yes. So how are we going to be worried about this? And we have even examples of this in the scriptures. If you go to 1 Kings, you read this incredible story about Elijah. So Elijah's out in the wilderness and, people are hungry. And God actually uses nasty ravens to bring him food. I think we need to make sure that we don't fall into the, I agree, very tempting option of getting too concerned and wrapped up in this. We must not be fearful. God has been clear that we must not be fearful. I do think it's a good idea to get a little bit of gold and silver, but far more important, store up your treasure in heaven and don't worry too much about it.
Excellent point, Alex. Yes, we are not to be fearful. Russ has a comment before we move on.
Yeah, just one. Is one's net worth going to be transferred into this digital currency? And thank you, Alex.
I'm sorry, I missed a couple of words there that you said, so I didn't get the whole question.
He's wondering if a person's net worth is going to be transferred into CBDCs.
Oh, very good question. I don't know the answer to that, but I do believe there's a very real possibility. And I know we're probably not going to have time to get too deep into this, but there's in parallel with the central bank digital currency system, there's being set up what these people are calling, I think deliberately to confuse people, an international blockchain ledger or a unified global blockchain ledger. And so I've seen their documents, right, from the Bank for International Settlements, which again is coordinating this whole process. They are not just proposing, they are working on a global digital blockchain system where every asset in the known universe, very much including your bank deposits, if you're allowed to keep them, will be tokenized. In other words, turned into a digital token that is then registered on this international blockchain system. And to be able to interact with this digital blockchain system, you will have to use, first of all, your digital ID, and second of all, your digital currencies. And so to give you kind of an example of how that might work, let's just say you want to sell a house or something more simple. Let's say you want to sell a tractor or a used car. Well, that asset is now a digital token that exists on this international blockchain ledger. And so you would have a digital contract whereby the buyer and the seller would come together. And when that seller, when the buyer's digital currency is transferred onto the blockchain ledger, the title for that asset is then transferred over right on the international blockchain ledger over to the buyer. The central bank digital currency is transferred over to the seller, and that is all permanently recorded on this international blockchain system. So that's the direction that they're moving in, and eventually they intend to move everything onto this digital ledger. Now, would that preclude me from, say, selling something to my neighbor in gold? No, it wouldn't. Unless the law did, of course. But, even with that system in place, I could still theoretically, if my neighbor's growing chickens and I've stored up a little bit of silver, I could say to my neighbor, hey, you give me some of those eggs, I'll give you some of the silver, and we would operate outside of that blockchain. But if they get their way, And they very much hope to get their way, and they expect to get their way. I don't know what God has in store, but if they get their way, yes, everything will be digitized. Every asset, not just your money, not just your deposits in your checking account, your savings account, whatever, but everything, your house, your car, your farm, your stocks, if you're fortunate enough to keep them. And that's maybe a subject for another day, but the great taking idea where all of the securities you think you own, you no longer have a actual private property right interest in them. We'll save that for another day, but everything would be tokenized, including your currency. And so that's the system they're designing. Again, and that's not my opinion. That's not speculation. I've seen their documents.
All righty. We got to move on because time, the clock is running down here. The next topic we want to get into is what you have called the UN's New World Climate Religion. Tell us about that, Alex.
So I've always kind of seen this in the background, but it has never been as obvious as it is now. So let me just give you a little bit of from what I saw at the last two climate summits. I've been going to these UN climate summits since I graduated from journalism school in 2009 was the first I went to in Copenhagen. And there's always been these religious undertones, and they've come more and more out of the closet. But let's work our way backwards. So the most recent one was on the Arabian Peninsula. And in their words, right at the heart of this conference, a huge conference, 80,000 people from around the world, presidents, kings, dictators, CEOs of the most important companies, all of them showing up here, thousands of so-called journalists, right in their words, at the heart of the conference was the Faith Pavilion. Now, the Faith Pavilion was a site of at least 100, maybe it was more events, really, really important events with all these different religious leaders. In fact, it was supposed to be inaugurated by Pope Francis himself. He was scheduled to come and give the inaugural address at the Faith Pavilion. He ended up getting sick, and so he wasn't able to attend, but he sent his Secretary of State, the Vatican Secretary of State. It was Cardinal Pietro Pidolin or whatever, I forget his name. So he read the Pope's speech for him. And the whole thing is worth reading because it'll give you some sense of where we're going. But one of the things that he said that was so critical, and I'll put it into context in a moment, is that what we are doing to nature and the environment, in the Pope's words, was an offense against God. So your carbon emissions, your CO2, the gas you exhale, you know, the gas that your exhaust pipe emits in your car. This is not just something that's allegedly bad for the planet. This is something that is a sin against God. Okay, that's what the Pope himself said. Now, the Pope's one of the big leaders in this movement. And I know there are many, many Catholics who are troubled by this development, but nonetheless, it is a fact and it's very, very open. So let's go back now to the previous one, which was even more revealing. I was on the Sinai Peninsula at the end of 2022, December 2022, for the COP27. This was the climate summit that took place in Sharm el-Sheikh, right on the Sinai Peninsula. And you actually had there the most flagrant example of this that I had ever seen in all my years of going to these things. So you had a whole collection of religious leaders, some of the top religious leaders from Islam, from various Christian denominations, including, by the way, evangelical and Protestantism, the Catholic Church, a lot of the Orthodox churches. You had Hindus, you had Shintos and Buddhists and numerous pagans and spiritualists. They flew in a guy from the Amazon rainforest with a feathered headdress to be a representative of Amazonian spirituality. And what they did up there, they walked up to the top of Mount Sinai, and first they did a climate repentance ceremony. And as part of this climate repentance ceremony, it very much looked to me like what I would imagine the prophets of Baal looked like on Mount Carmel. It is total ridiculousness. But they're repenting to the climate gods about their CO2 emissions and all the rest of it. And then they did an even more blasphemous thing. They took out these tablets painted green. They called them the New Ten Commandments. And then in this, you know, throwback, I guess, to what Moses did, the guy who was holding them smashes them on the floor and starts ranting and raving about how, you know, people are so bad and governments need to do more to save us from global warming. I think quite obviously missing the irony of the, you know, the syncretism here where you're working with pagans. And, you know, of course, Moses was so upset when he saw the God's people worshiping this golden calf. But, you know, set the irony aside, but really, really blasphemous. And here's the incredible part, Rob. I actually ran into the organizers of this thing at the UN conference the next day. They wouldn't let me walk up to Mount Sinai with them. I had to go up the next day. But so I ran into the four organizers of this. You had Rabbi Yonathan Narrell, the head of the Interfaith Center for Sustainable Development. You had Sternlich, James Sternlich, the CEO of the Peace Department. You had Metropolitan Seraphim from the Greek Orthodox Church. And then you had a young man from the, I think it was the World Evangelical something. And so I got them on camera. They didn't know who I was, and they agreed to talk to me on camera. And I got them talking, again, on camera. You can go watch this, about how they are not just bringing us the new Ten Commandments. They're also now working on what James Sternlich of the Peace Department described as the next covenant, right? The third covenant. So God gave us the old Ten Commandments. These guys, UN and friends, are giving us the new Ten Commandments. And by the way, the new Ten Commandments are totally blasphemous. You know, compassion means feeling the cries of Mother Earth, and we're all one with nature, all kinds of silliness. And so this new covenant, he said, we're going to be using to build the kingdom of heaven here on earth. He said this to me on camera. So that is incredible. And it's especially incredible when you consider that right before the climate summit started, the UN released a report, the Human Development Report for 2022. It was called Uncertain Times, Unsettled Lives, Shaping Our Future in a Transforming World. And they openly declared, and I'm paraphrasing here, but almost exactly what they said, that these evolutionary processes that led to our current system of ethics and morality are no longer suitable for the world today. And the primary reason, obviously, is because they don't believe that that's helping us adequately care for Mother Earth. So they said we need a new system of ethics and morality that, in their words, will cause people to make fundamental changes in their choices, and they will act according to new moral codes. So they're very, very openly here announcing a new system of morality that all the religions of the world are supposed to get behind. The UN actually had all these posters all over the airport. It was Welcome to Egypt, the Dawn of Conscience, and it quoted extensively from this ancient pagan Egyptian document about the afterlife, where it says, you know, you need to let me into the, I'm paraphrasing again, but you need to let me into the afterlife because I didn't pollute the air or the water. As in, again, your sin is your environmental footprint. So we can keep going back in time. You know, one of the things that really jumped out at me at a even earlier UN conference, and I'll stop here. I could go on this for 2 hours. But one of the things that really jumped out at me, I believe it was 2010. Yeah, it was 2010. The UN held their climate conference in Cancun in Mexico. And it opened up with Cristiana Figueres. She's the UN FCCC, the Executive Secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. And she opens it up with a prayer in her word. And the Washington Post wrote about this, by the way, a prayer to the Mayan goddess Ixchel. And she told the attendees, again, I'm paraphrasing, but we're praying to Ixchel, that she's the goddess of tapestries and creativity, that she would help us to weave a creative tapestry of solutions for this allegedly impossible global warming crisis. So I whipped out my laptop and started searching. Who is this Ixchel? Was the first question that came into my mind. And literally, the first three results on the search engine was, well, the goddess of cannibalism, the goddess of war, the goddess of human sacrifice. I thought, man, this is really, really appropriate for this conference. And so all the religions of the world are being sucked into this, Rob. They have something they call Religions for Peace. It's basically a UN auxiliary. It's funded by the UN. It's funded by our State Department, by the Rockefellers, by George Soros, by the EU, et cetera. And the new head of this organization, her name is Dr. Aza Karam. She came out of the UN Population Fund. I've got her on tape saying, we are the UN of religions. And she says to me, in plain English, all the religions of the world are a part of this, all the faith traditions of the world. And of course, my question is, well, what if my church is not a part of it? And the answer to that is quite simple. They don't regard you then as a legitimate believer, a religious institution. You're actually some kind of extremist, a cult or whatever, and then you need to be stamped out. So all Bible-believing Christians who do not want to unite behind this program are, by definition, according to them, not a religion. And they got together in 2019, and they really let the cat out of the bag. I've got their final declaration that they came up with. They said that all of them agreed and committed to human development as set forth in the UN Sustainable Development Goals, the Agenda 2030, which the head of the UN General Assembly at the time said was the master plan for humanity. So all the religions of the world, all the governments of the world, and now all the big businesses of the world through the Economic Forum, the World Economic Forum, are marching in lockstep toward a one world economic, political, and religious system. And it's happening in real time, folks. It's not coming. It's happening now.
Unbelievably wicked. And all of this stuff is intertwined and linked together, isn't it? You just blew my mind again, Alex. You know, in the 1970s, we were warned about the coming global ice age by 2000. And then it changed to global warming, and now they just call it climate change. But, you know, the carbon that they want to do away with is us. That's human right. beings are made of carbon. and it goes back to the same thing. It's a part of a massive depopulation agenda. And I know that sounds conspiracy theorist in nature, but it's happening, folks. It's real. It's going on right now. Look at the chemtrails. Used to be called a conspiracy theory. Well, you know, now we know that the state of Tennessee has recognized that as being a real thing, and they've launched a bill to stop that in their state. But people deny what they see with their own eyes. Checkerboard patterns over a blue sky in the morning, and within a couple hours, you've got a completely overcast day, and who knows what they're spraying on us. What do you know about the chemtrails, Alex?
Well, let's start with the depopulation agenda. That is absolutely not conspiratorial at all. Again, it doesn't fit the definition of conspiracy because they're doing this in the open. Right? I've got at least 5 or 8 interviews somewhere in there from the COP24 that I went to. This was in Madrid, where some of the keynote speakers are openly telling you that we must reduce the population of people on this planet. They've said it to my face on camera. They're not even worried about saying it anymore. They say it openly. They believe there are too many people on Earth. They say it absolutely openly. They don't care who hears it anymore. They're unashamed. They believe there's too many of us. And they fully intend to reduce the number of us on the planet. In fact, the UN has a whole agency dedicated to this proposition. It's called the UN Population Fund. They were exposed working with the Communist Chinese Party to do forced abortions on women in China to enforce the one-child policy. They worked with the Indian government to do forced sterilizations. Just an absolute atrocity. The lady I mentioned earlier who runs Religions for Peace, Dr. Aza Karam, she was with the UN Population Fund before taking over Religions for Peace. So when it comes to whatever they're doing in the sky, I wish I had a better sense of what they are doing. I don't know what they are doing. I know they're up to no good. It's very clear that this is not normal. I was thrilled to see Tennessee take the lead on this and work on statutory language that will rein this in. Because the skies are generally considered to be, at least under the jurisdiction of the federal government, especially through the FAA and these different federal agencies, it'll be an interesting battle here between the state and the feds, assuming the state actually moves forward and does something serious with this statute, which I hope they will. But from what I have seen about this, they are putting things into the sky that do not belong. There are things that are known to be toxic to human health. There's an individual who's done a lot of work on this, Dane Wigington. I consider him to be very credible and really one of the leading authorities on this issue who are critical of this. Now, we know they have talked openly for many years at Harvard. Bill Gates has talked about this, geoengineering, they call it, trying to manipulate the weather. And so under the guise of saving us from alleged global warming, they have openly talked for many years about spraying things in the sky to dim the sun, to reflect the sun back into the sky. So again, I don't know precisely what they're doing, but I know enough about these evildoers to know that it is not for our benefit. And if it were linked to population control, I would not be surprised in the slightest. In fact, that is one of the most, in my opinion, logical explanations.
Absolutely. I have a friend who lives in northern Wisconsin who's been researching this for decades. And she has also taken samples of soil and water before and after one of these chemtrail events. And the independent lab studies from what she's found have been incredible.
Yep. Incredibly aluminum toxic and barium.
Amounts of aluminum and barium. And I think she found 97 different toxic elements in the water and in the soil. It's been years since I've spoken with her, but she would take samples the day before, when everything was clean, the day of, and then, follow it, weekly and send these samples into independent labs. And so, yes, I believe it absolutely does have to do with depopulation. Just yesterday, they San Diego, San Francisco? I don't remember. California somewhere. They launched salt crystals into the atmosphere to block out the sun, and they clearly stated that was their purpose. What does the sun do for us besides giving us D3 and growing our food? You know, but they're blocking out the sun and not afraid to tell people what they're doing. Anyone in the audience, questions, comments? Now is your chance. Okay, all right, we're gonna let it go. So I hate to get into our next topic because we only have about 5 minutes left. So tell us more about what you know on the climate situation, Alex.
Well, from a scientific perspective, the climate change narrative is a total fraud, right? The idea that the gas we exhale is a toxic pollution, but if we pay enough taxes to the UN, then suddenly the temperature of the planet is going to be fine. It's so utterly absurd. It's hard to imagine that any adult could possibly take that seriously. But from a totalitarian perspective, I got to give them this. It is positively brilliant, because if you can convince people that the gas they exhale is pollution, and that it needs to be taxed and regulated, literally everything a person does then falls under the regulatory purview of the government. And not just any government, by the way. They talk about this as a global problem, and global problems require global solutions, and therefore global control over every aspect of your life. Literally, there's nothing you can do that doesn't emit CO2. You can't breathe. You can't even die, right? When you die, your body decomposes, and CO2 is emitted into the atmosphere. So this is a control mechanism that will bring every element of life under the power of these totalitarians if they get their way. And you know, we touched a little bit on the religious angle here. It is one of the primary drivers of this new horrific apostate fake theology that we're seeing now, unfortunately, even in a lot of allegedly evangelical churches. They're telling us that we need to repent for our carbon footprint and the environmental damage and things. This is blasphemous, right? This is absolutely and utterly blasphemous. We know, we who have read our Bibles know that, you know, heaven and earth are going to pass away, right? It's in Matthew chapter 24. They're gone. They're going to pass away. But what's not going to pass away? His words are not going to pass away. Now, it's true the planet's going to burn, right? Second Peter chapter 3 explains this very clearly, right? The earth is being stored up for fire, okay? So it's going to burn, but it's not going to be because of the gas you exhale. And so we need to be really clear here that any religion that absorbs this fake climate theology is fraudulent. It is apostate. It is not the truth. It is not in accord with what the Bible teaches. And for Christians to spend their time worrying about carbon emissions when we know people's souls are going to end up in hell for all eternity is the height of idiocy. Jesus gave us a lot of instructions. In fact, if we had a million lifetimes, we could never possibly fulfill all of the things that Jesus has asked us to do. We're supposed to be making disciples of all nations, right? There's no time to worry about your carbon footprint. I'm sorry. So any church that gets involved in this, I think needs to be immediately seen as suspect. If you're in a church that has gotten involved in this, talk to the elders, talk to the pastor, explain to them what the Bible teaches on these things. And I don't mean to sound unnecessarily harsh or anything. I think we need to understand this climate agenda is from the pit of hell, has nothing to do with Christianity. You know, no matter how you try to twist the scriptures, you can never get out of them that Christians ought to be spending time worried about their CO2 emissions. There's no way to get that out of there. And so something else is going on here. And as the UN itself says, they are harnessing religious movements for this climate issue. They are using them as, in the words of Rabbi Jonathan Narrell, who I interviewed about these new Ten Commandments, they're using religion and religious institutions as the delivery vehicle for climate madness. But ladies and gentlemen, read your Bible. There's nothing in there about your carbon footprint. Again, this planet is going to burn. All of the carbon taxes in the world are not going to make any difference on that. And so let's focus on the important things, the instructions that God has actually given us. And again, if you're in a church where this is creeping in, try to nip it in the bud as quickly as possible, because it's blasphemous, it's ridiculous, and in my opinion, it is antichrist.
And it is absolutely fraudulent and one of the best control mechanisms that the globalists have. There's nothing that human beings or any living being can do to affect the weather on this planet, one iota. Same with fossil fuels. I'll just say that. Betty has a comment.
A great, great show, great comments there, Alex. I do agree with you with everything, and it is so overwhelming. But the only reason they're fighting so hard is because they're losing. We're winning. Because of Jesus, we're winning. And we will keep winning because he's already won. So thank you for all the great information. My head feels this big now, but I really enjoyed. Thank you so much for all that.
Amen. Thank you, Betty. And I'll just remind folks, our enemy is going to end up in the lake of fire. So be of good cheer. Be encouraged. We know where this is all going, and we know how it's going to end. God is already victorious. Praise the Lord for that. We just need to do what he told us to do.
All righty. And Alex is going to have a lot more for us this weekend at our conference in Wisconsin. Jonathan, do we have time to just give the folks a quick preview of what Alex is going to be speaking on this weekend? This is a 10-second audio clip, 20-second audio clip. Okay, so I'm not endorsing that band, so don't write me any letters, but I thought those words were relevant for the topic coming up on Saturday. Find out more about Alex at his website, libertysentinel.org. Next week, I'm going to be on the road, but Dr. Michael will be here with another great guest, and I will be back in 2 weeks with Steve Quayle for you as my guest. We'll see you then. Till then, God bless you. Bye.